Welcome to the Index Podcast, hosted by Alex Kahaya. Plug in as we explore new frontiers with Web3 and the decentralized future.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to The Index, brought to you by The Graph, where we talk with the entrepreneurs building the next wave of the internet. I'm your host, Alex Kahaya, and today I'm excited to welcome Frank Meng, the COO of Nova Labs, the world's largest decentralized wireless network built on Solana, and the creators of the Helium Network. We're going to learn about Helium Network's innovative approach to wireless connectivity and the Internet of Things and how it's making an impact on the world. Thanks so much for being here today. I'm excited to have this conversation with you, Frank.
Alex, great to see you. I think it's been like 4 years since we saw each other in person.
It's been a while. Yeah, I remember sitting in your office when I was working with Orchid and meeting with your team and like seeing the motherboards and stuff, like all these prototypes all over the office before. I think it was even before you guys launched your big first pre-sale for the devices that you eventually shipped to, gosh, now it's like millions of people, right? Right. I mean, back then it was just an idea. You were like fundraising for this like new kind of mesh network is like kind of how we were talking about it. But I don't know. I'll let you go back. Like, tell me your story. I mean, just kind of how you got to working on Helium and how it got started.
Yeah, Alex, you were definitely there in the beginning when we were just trying to implement the Helium white paper, at least the original V like one or something of the white paper. But Helium as a company, Helium Systems Inc. specifically, started back in 2013, co-founded by Sean Fanning of Napster fame and the current CEO and founder of Nova Labs, Amir Haleem. So the two of them actually got together to start Helium Systems Inc. to solve a problem of keeping track of drones. I think at the time, Sean Fanning was enamored with drones and flying drones. In 2013, I think drones were still sort of a innovative, advanced technology, not what it is today. And so finding and keeping track of those drones were important. And he thought, well, what if there was a network that the drones can stay connected to, especially when it flies further away and can't connect to Wi-Fi or your phone, if it's attached to your phone, how could we solve this problem? And so sort of that was like the beginning of the idea. How do we solve that problem? And, you know, the mission, the original mission of Helium Systems Inc. at the onset for the Series A was to create a global IoT network, Internet of Things network. That evolved and iterated into different like IoT verticals, IoT applications, IoT developer kits, and so forth. And I remember in like end of 2017, when I joined, and I think I'm getting these dates correct, this idea of building a global network sort of came back around after trying verticals and failing. And so the company actually failed like, I don't know, 5-6 times and tried different approaches to getting a global network built. The thing that stuck was literally when we're back in the corner and we had, you know, 8-9 months of runway left, a group of engineers sitting around with Amir were just sort of brainstorming. It was either Bones or Fark or Professor talked about Bitcoin and what if we could like put Bitcoin in access points for IoT, Internet of Things. Would that convince people to help build a network? And that sort of sparked this journey of exploring crypto, blockchain. I think Amir found a white paper that he talks about quite a bit, which is Filecoin and their approach for decentralizing storage in the cloud. And that was a huge inspiration, along with some other, I think, white papers and conversations in the early days of blockchain and crypto beyond Bitcoin and beyond Ethereum. And so we sort of like were a group of people that just had no idea what crypto was, no idea what blockchain was. We're wireless technology networking people. And really, we found that this idea of incentivizing individuals to also work together to build and own a network maybe would work. We had no idea. So it was sort of our last shot. And that sort of set us off on a journey into the world of crypto and blockchain and looking at how incentives could impact physical infrastructure, and in this case, creation of wireless networks. So that was the beginning of Helium's original hotspots, which I think you came into the office and saw us working on alphas and betas at that time. I don't even think we had production units. I think we were just testing betas.
Yeah, you just had the betas. I think you had literally just found a way to manufacture them. Like, I remember talking about it and you were like about to do the pre-sale process. It was super early. And I was smiling during that story because, number one, I had not heard that story. I didn't even know that Sean Fanning was involved in the company previously. And I appreciate you sharing that you guys had 8 to 9 months of runway at that time, because there's so many companies right now that are going through the same thing, right? Like, this bear market is brutal. A lot of founders are out there like, nothing worked, right? Nothing they did worked between when they raised like 2 years ago and where they are now. And I think the lesson there is like, keep just getting creative and keep just shipping, like keep trying to ship and keep believing your team. If you have a good team with like good talent, like you can figure it out. You got to just keep pushing right up to the wire. And I'm interested to hear like, okay, you're sitting at the table and you're like, what if we just put Bitcoin in these things? When you're looking at like drop dead 8 months from now, 9 months from now, like what was that conversation like for the team? And how did you get from there to survival? You know, like what was the process like to survive through that time? There were several like formative companies that had the same thing. Like Solana is one of them, right? Like they almost didn't make it during the last bear market. And now look at where Solana is. So I'm just curious to hear that part of the story. Like what was survival like? And how did you go from the light bulb of what if we did Bitcoin in these things to making it?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes to your point, when you're in survival mode, I think you just never know. Some of the best ideas come out of situations where there is no plan B, sort of you're out of plan Bs. And now you really have to execute, and you have to execute not flawlessly, but at your highest potential. That only comes, I think, when the threat of existence is looming over you. And that's where the company was. I think to Amir's credit, as many founders probably will understand this, and Amir is no different. He has never changed. His fanatical conviction on a global IoT network has to exist. It's just a question of how, never changed. His belief that it will happen, it's just a question of like, what is the trigger? What is the moment? What are a set of circumstances to enable that to occur? And I think for us, that lightning strike was when Bitcoin and Ethereum all of a sudden became household words. You saw it on CNBC. It was conversation about it. You know, it was lots of questions from, I think, our own family members who you never think knew anything about technology. All of a sudden is asking, what's Bitcoin? That was for us, I think, where we were lucky to get that lightning strike happen adjacent to us. And then Amir's ability to get the team together and the little group of engineers to really harness that and turn it into a layer one, which is the Helium blockchain. That process was not easy. I think it was very iterative, and it was recognition of, well, we just don't know, and we're not going to know unless we try. And we really don't have any other options at this point. So we'll give it all we have. That path, I think, comes out of survival mode. And it's usually when you're facing life or death, in this case of a company, that MacGyver-like instinct kicks in and you start to try things that's outside the box. Certainly in the world of wireless technology, crypto blockchain is out of the box. That is not something that anyone really, I think, executed on. Maybe there were other thoughts and other people with similar ideas, and certainly similar ideas and iteration of those ideas, but we were not aware of anyone else that actually executed on a physical product. We really focused on then at that point, just executing and executing as quickly and swiftly as possible to get to an MVP. Even that alone was a struggle. Folks that understand hardware and wireless technology know how hard it is to build your own SDR, get the firmware to work, get the signals to work, operating with open source code with zero instructions, it's a journey, not an easy journey at that. And so for a group of guys like Amir and the engineering team to really go down that path and endeavor, certainly was brave, but it's calculated. And I think in Amir's mind, you know, 9 months of runway is a lot, actually. He'll tell you that if you ask him. And I think most founders will agree, it's plenty of time. I think he also knew if they could get a product working, he could raise money. And that's something I think Amir has been pretty incredible at. We got working alpha. I think we got working beta in fairly decent amount of time, to the point where we were able to have conversations with some VCs, certainly along the way, sharing the idea. And again, this is sort of partially luck, partially Amir just being himself. He sort of befriended the Multicoin Capital guys, and he, I think, spent some time talking to both Kyle and Tushar, the GPs there at the time, and they're still GPs now. And Kyle ended up spending a couple of sessions just sort of hanging out in our office when we were at, you know, 12 people or so. And in that, I think in that engagement with Kyle, he saw sort of what we were doing and how we were doing it. I think he was also sort of observing, you know, not just the idea, but the execution of the idea. So that kind of, I think, gave us a good rapport with him. But he's an incredibly different kind of investor. I don't think Kyle would say he's an electrical engineer or a wireless engineer or any engineer, but he spent time to really understand what we were thinking, our thesis, our conviction on that thesis, and how we're executing. And that, I think, speaks a lot to Kyle's investment philosophy, but it also showed us that he's trying to understand what we're doing and trying to understand the landscape. So that engagement with Kyle over a period of time was very helpful for us, because once we were ready to raise, there was a lot less education needed in talking with Kyle and Tushar. They also added a ton of value in thinking through on the crypto side. That's the space they're coming from: financial systems, decentralization, leveraging blockchain and crypto to really change the mechanics of how the financial system works. That's sort of their point of view. Our point of view is wireless technology. And so Tushar played a huge role in really guiding us and thinking through and iterating on our white paper, and really thinking through how incentive models could work. Tushar and his team really brought the idea of the burn and mint equilibrium model, which is a way in which our L1 works, for the ability to both mine the cryptocurrency HNT, but also to use that HNT in a way that is stable for enterprises who have Internet of Things and use cases that would need this network. So those ideas we didn't just like magically come up with. It really was an engagement process over time with some smart VCs. And so Multicoin got involved with us in that sort of planning process even before we were raising. And I think that was really helpful. And then I think just by a stroke of luck, Union Square Ventures came and met with us. And it wasn't Fred Wilson, but it was another, I think one of the other GPs. And that group, Union Square Ventures, was thinking about investing in us. And so they wanted to do their own checks. They were, I think, trying to figure out this crypto angle, the blockchain angle. And it just so happened that they worked with Multicoin, and Multicoin was sort of a team that they went to check on viability of crypto projects. And so the universe is sort of just collided, and Multicoin, Kyle in this case, was like, well, no, we're going to invest in Helium. And so this became a thing.
Yeah. Nothing like a little competition to grease the wheels, you know, that's always the best scenario. Yeah.
That was helpful. And so then, you know, they collaborated and then jointly led our round of Series C. So we went from, you know, probably 4 months of 3 months of runway left at that point.
Three's cutting it tight. That goes by real fast, you know, in startup world. But yeah, it's like, that's like basically right up to the line, and then bam, you've got your funding.
Yeah, but we were in survival mode. And so Amir, I think he was pretty smart about cash management at that point and burn management. You know, we're down to like 11 or 12 people. I think we were relatively okay. It's not for the faint of heart, but the guy is, like I said, doesn't change. He's probably the calmest CEO I've ever met in my life. He has the vision of how things will play out. He's so far, you know, been right.
I thought about that attribute of founders and CEOs a lot, and having founded several companies myself now at this point and like grown as an entrepreneur, it is a practice, I think, at least it is for me. I probably get a lot more anxiety than Amir does about like stuff, right? And to keep that clear head, you got to stay calm. Like you cannot let this like constant, oh, are we going to run out of money? Or there's all these problems. Like you can't let any problem really like throw you off, because it's just constant. It doesn't even, and even after you guys raised, I'm sure you've dealt with so many existential crises, you know, I mean, just the switch from your own L1 to Solana was like a huge move. And that could have, for somebody, like would like create just a ton of uncertainty and stress, but you got to guide the ship and stay calm. And I think it's like a massively important and underrated attribute of the person who's like helming your company and of a person who should found a company, right? Like I do think it's something that is natural, like an innate personality trait of people, of certain people, but I also think it is something you can, just like anything else, like any athlete trains for in a sport, you can harden your mind to stay calm in extremely adverse situations, like right up to the wire. That's just what it takes.
It does. And I think in this case, just to like wrap up sort of your original question about how do you kind of maneuver that path of you're nearing sort of the end of the life of the company if you don't raise money to raising money. And I think ultimately it does come down to those attributes from a founder, CEO, but also execution on a problem that is not only interesting, but incredibly hard. I think that kind of challenge really does spark more interest from investors or VCs that like what I would consider very difficult technology. People that feel like that mission is incredibly audacious. Because then it's interesting, it's an incredibly difficult problem. Some folks have tried to solve it and failed multiple times throughout history, but then it becomes a bet on the person in the team. Could this person, Amir Haleem, and the team he has do something different given the different circumstances that we faced? And so I think having a problem that is incredibly difficult and very interesting usually, I think, will draw some attention, will bring...
But it brings the best people together. Like the 10 or 12 people you had working with you, that whole team, like they wouldn't be doing anything if it wasn't hard, right? And interesting, you know, they'd just be bored. And this is what gets them out of bed every day. And I think that's why so many talented people have been attracted to this space. But I think to crypto in general, right? But I think it can't be understated just how hard what you've done is. There were a lot of teams back then, not a lot, but like a handful of teams that were considering like mesh networking things and like hardware related. Really, you guys pioneered was now called DePIN, right? Like decentralized physical infrastructure. And there were people thinking about that back then. There was zero tooling. You're already building on open source software for the wireless side and the hardware side of things, but then you're also building on open source, most anyway, open source, like blocked, I'm using like air quotes for people listening, blockchain technology. Like what is that even? All like the 1,001 projects that were coming out at that time that were open source, but like half complete and totally experimental. Like everything was based off of white papers that was cutting edge cryptography, right? Like it really is the bleeding edge of and completely unknown if it's even possible to do it in this way. And then you guys rolled your own blockchain, which back then a lot of people were trying to do because it was kind of the only option. Like you would look at the 100 different open source projects out there and you'd be like, well, there's just too many risks here. Why don't I just de-risk the one thing I can, which is I've got my team, you know, and I'll use them. I don't know if that's exactly how you guys looked at it. I know enough about that time period. It's like, it's crazy. It's crazy that you guys actually built what you built. And we should talk about that. Cause so what did you build? Like you shipped this device, what did it do? Like how many are there? Just talk about like the network and the capabilities real quick.
Sure. So the original Helium IoT network started with Helium Systems Inc. building the entire stack. So we built the initial hardware architecture. We used as much open source and off-the-shelf parts as we could. So we had like the original hotspot was like comprised of some Arduino, Raspberry Pi, and a custom encryption board and a LoRaWAN concentrator. These bits and pieces essentially enabled us to create a consumer grade, or at least a consumer installable LoRaWAN IoT network. And that's a bunch of like gobbledygook for people that are not in the wireless world. But essentially, it's an IoT network that uses partial open source tech and mostly open source tech or off the shelf tech. And that allowed us to move quickly, at least from getting what we call these Helium hotspots into the hands of individuals. One of the attributes of the IoT network that is, I think, advantageous to have consumers build is that it uses unlicensed sub-gigahertz spectrum. So in the United States, that's like the 900 megahertz spectrum. And that allows wireless signals to travel for miles, and like how many miles it just depends on the physics and depends on height, depends on like the time of day and whether it's raining. So it's wireless signals, environments matter, but you know, in like on average, you're talking miles. And so getting a consumer to put a Helium hotspot literally at like by the living room window could create like, imagine like 2-3 miles of coverage, which is insane. Now the data that transmitted on that network is tiny. We're not talking about someone's ability to watch, you know, Netflix or something on that signal. We're talking about a temperature sensor or a smoke sensor, potentially, you know, in the forest. And if a fire starts, it can send that smoke sensor can detect it and use literally someone's Helium hotspot by their window to transmit that data to the internet and alert authorities that, hey, there's a tree on fire. Go take a look before the entire, you know, state of California burns down or whatever. That kind of application use case is what we were imagining. It required us to take a highly industrial piece of technology, which is Internet of Things, IoT, very industrial, and make it consumer and make it so that, you know, Alex, you and your family and your friends and your parents who have no clue what IoT stands for will go and plug a Helium hotspot into their home and tether it to their home Wi-Fi so that they could capture IoT sensor data that happened to be nearby within like miles of range and transmit that data to the internet. Now, why would anyone do this? Like, what's the motivation? What's the incentive? Right? This incentive piece becomes important. The crypto becomes a feature for us as we saw it. Our objective is to build this physical wireless network owned and operated by individuals, your friends and neighbors. And in exchange, they would, at the time we called it mine cryptocurrency. In this case, a Helium network token, which is the native token of a layer one from Helium. That incentive, you know, was worth nothing at the time. When we first started, there was no value. And there can be no value unless a market takes place. And so we can't control that. All we could do was convince people to do this. And in early days, we had like 10 or 12,000 units of our first, you know, Helium hotspot build. And we built those in like combination of San Jose, California, and then we tried China with our partners at Rack Wireless. We didn't know what we're doing. We're just trying to get a piece of hardware built at some scale and as fast as we can and try to sell it. And we had to do it in a way that essentially inspired people to just want to own and operate a network. And you would do it really just for that. And that's incredibly difficult. So we barely sold any. It was just like trickles. 5 a day or something in the early days. And we tried everything, Alex. I don't know if you remember, but we had like Mother's Day specials. Like we had, you know, Thanksgiving pies. We had hot cocoa for Christmas bundles.
I'm on your email list. I remember a bunch of the promos that you guys have done over the last couple of years. But yeah, I mean, it started as a trickle, but I mean, how many are out there today? How many of these hotspots are out there today?
I think at the peak, we closed in on 1 million hotspots globally, and that was across 70,000 cities, like 180 countries at the peak. And since sort of crypto winter hit and the migration to Solana, I think we're like, I haven't checked recently, but I want to say we're in that 450,000 range. So about half or a little under half of where we were at the peak. Even at 400,000 or 450,000 hotspots around the world, the network's incredibly useful still. And it's the usage on the network is growing at a steady pace, which is fantastic. But I think something to note to your listeners, there's no way Helium Systems Inc. could do this by ourselves. Like a series of events had to occur for this to actually take off. And the first, I think, critical thing we did was we open sourced the hardware and we enabled outside third-party manufacturers to take our design as reference design and build their own. We supported them. You know, that's like sort of like you think about a series of milestones that helped us get to liftoff, get an ecosystem to kind of like come and build the hardware with you, give them the designs, give them the whatever they need. We even assisted them as much as we could on the overall user experience just to ensure that it was much more consumer oriented than industrial, because we want everyone to be involved and we need everyone to be involved to have a massive network. So the UX and UI focused on consumers was really critical. So we really try to provide a lot of assistance there while open sourcing everything. And that was like a big, I think, opening to get more volume, more availability of Helium hotspots out there. We hit a bunch of like supply chain problems, like availability of chips, Raspberry Pis. I feel like our growth was unexpected for a lot of vendors. Certainly Raspberry Pis, there was not enough Pis out there in the world to do what we need to do, because that's not what it was built for. Those are like, you know, project kits and such, and we're using it in production, so it was not what it was meant for. LoRaWAN chips, the gateway chips, were also in short supply because they didn't see this kind of growth coming. We didn't either. No one did. That was a big unlock for us. And then I think the second unlock was just the community. Once you open source code and you start to, I think, draw the attention of some credible community members that come from the wireless world, that come from the crypto world, you start to build following. And that really helped us like tremendously. Without a community of people helping to like answer questions on Discord, you know, answer questions on Reddit, or like really help us kill the FUD on Reddit, Twitter, all these different gathering places where the community members can share ideas and like do their research, check the facts and understand how everything worked. We could not do that with the group of people. We launched this with like, we were down to 11. I think when we launched, we were at 20 people, maybe. I mean, that's nuts. We just didn't have that many people. So for 20 people or 25 people or something like that, to expect us to manage that kind of growth and support the community that way is impossible. So it was absolutely, the credit goes to like the Helium community of folks that were technical, understood our technology, looked through the designs, our third-party manufacturers that build hotspots. And then the IoT ecosystem really embracing us and working with us, I think, lots of gratitude to them, because they really provided the resources, the answers, the FAQs, a lot of support there. And I think that credibility and that movement really helped ultimately with like creation of a secondary market for the crypto component itself, whether that was like over-the-counter type of secondary market or some kind of exchange adoption. The community really drove that. And we're just like incredibly fortunate that they were able to figure this out, and they're passionate about this and drove that movement. So
there are very few examples in our in crypto where this actually worked, right? Where not just for physical infrastructure, but for anything, where like the economics and like the incentives and all that stuff actually bootstrapped a real viable economy for like a real world use case, right? I mean, you've got the IoT network, but then you've also got Helium Mobile that you just launched. That's, you know, 5G cellular service on your phone. I have a Saga phone and I've got the Helium like free trial SIM card and stuff like that running on there. And there's so much when I got into crypto in 2016, there's so much that everybody was like pontificating about and white papers and all this stuff. And then it's like rubber meets the road. Like, how do you actually do this? And y'all have actually gotten through it. And I think, you know, the number of nodes to me, when I hear the drop in node count, I just think like that's normal market dynamics and it shows it's viable, right? Like long-term, this thing is viable and that number will get much bigger down the road because these markets are so nascent. So you can't expect them to be like, you're going to see these big booms and troughs and stuff like that. But it's the ones that actually have staying power that stay at, you know, still half of the size that's still got utility and growing usage. Like, I think this is something that the public still doesn't quite understand. Like most people who are not in our space, like look at the fundamentals of the actual network and the product being used. There's like a bunch of, you know, metrics and stuff you can look at like token price or the node count, and you might think, oh, this thing's failing or something. But if you actually look at the things being built and how it's performing, then you get a real picture. And I think this is where the alpha comes from. You know, you like look at what's happening around this and like other projects that are trying to do similar things and then actually compare it to what Helium is built. And you're like, nobody even comes close. It's just too hard. The moat you've built is like too hard to replicate. Community, the number of people running nodes, the actual usage of the network, like, open source is actually the thing that unlocks all of it too, which is the best thing about your story. Like, a lot of people are afraid to open source their projects. And you guys and the Solana and Raj and Tolly were like, back when I first met you, were some of the very few teams actually building in the open. A lot of people were building open source projects, using air quotes here again, but actually they were like kind of R&D backroom research companies, and they weren't actually like doing open source and building something that could last where the rubber meets the road. Yeah. So I just find that whole story just fascinating. And it's really cool to see.
When we were going down this journey, I remember meeting with Raj and Tolly. They were starting it. They started, I think, a little bit before us. But we chatted with them as well during the time when we were trying to figure out what to do. And when we first met with Tolly and Raj, it was, they were still in development of their white paper and their idea. So they weren't quite where they are today. We had to go survive, so we had to build our own. We really did not want to build a blockchain.
Yeah, nobody wants to do that. I mean, they shouldn't want to. They might think they want to, yeah. But like, dude, it's hard. It's like, how many hard things can one company try to do? You know?
Yeah. No, the hardware itself is already very difficult. But getting a blockchain to scale with a million nodes on it, I would not recommend that.
Yeah. So then obviously, you know, Solana matured, and like what led to the conversation or decision to port Helium over to run on Solana?
There's a lot, and it wasn't just Solana. We looked at a lot of different layer ones, because I think from 5 years ago to now, there are quite a number of great layer ones out there with a lot of great attributes. And so the technical team certainly did evaluate quite a few, including Solana. I think ultimately, as far as from a more of a business decision perspective and sort of, I would say, being pragmatic overall from a Mir's perspective, number one, if we didn't have to manage and maintain a blockchain, it would free up our resources to do so many more things. Everything from looking at use cases and at the time it was really to figure out how we can create a different type of network, another network, you know, cellular now, right? But at the time it was like, there are other ways in which we can use this incentive model. And we just don't have the time to go and like explore and innovate because we were so caught up in firefighting and keeping our own chain up and running. And that was very taxing. That was just a lot of time spent. And so if we didn't have to spend that time, we could innovate more on the use case side. We can innovate more on the incentive model and drive adoption of the incentive model in different infrastructures, different wireless protocols. So we were just like, there's all this opportunity lost due to the fact that we're firefighting 24/7. The other was just an ecosystem. We created a purposeful chain that had one purpose, and that's to keep this IoT network up and running. We didn't have an ecosystem. Like, we couldn't participate in all the different creative aspects of crypto from, at the time, you know, DeFi to NFTs, and there's so many.
Yeah.
So many.
I mean, I want to double tap on that, because I still meet a lot of companies that want to build, roll their own thing, whether it's a fork of Ethereum or Polkadot or even fork of Solana. And I think you cannot underestimate how hard it is to build the ecosystem around what you're doing that creates the value, right? Like, so much of the value has to do with all the infrastructure providers providing RPC services, all the different DeFi utility, the liquidity of something as simple as, like, is there USDC running on your chain? And is there any liquidity? All these things make a huge difference in your ability to grow a business. And so I think the reason people go down that rabbit hole today is because they're just, like, very opinionated about the technology instead of, you know what I mean, about the actual blockchain technology. And I think back when you guys started and built your own, there was no other choice, really. There really wasn't another option. Today, there definitely are. I think, like you said, there are multiple layer ones that, like, I find it hard to believe that you really need to build your own layer one, and that if you do, and it's not your sole focus, you're giving up a lot. You know, you're giving up a lot of opportunity, and also the distraction, and, you know, of actually having to maintain it. I totally see where you're coming from. We only have a couple of minutes left here before we have to wrap up, and I really want to tap into Helium Mobile a little bit more. Can you just explain how it works? Like, is the network run on the phones? Like, am I routing traffic on my phone, or is it, like, connecting to the hotspots? Or is it, like, I know you guys partnered with T-Mobile, so it's, like, part T-Mobile's network and part the people's network. Like, walk me through how that works.
Sure, I will. I'm just going to give you some context around Nova Labs. So Nova Labs, after we open sourced the entire Helium stack and a Helium Foundation was formed, we handed everything over to the community to self-govern through the Helium Foundation. That includes the name Helium. And so we decided as a company that we need to get off that name, chose Nova Labs, and we are now a participant in that open ecosystem. No different than, like, Red Hat and Linux. You know, some, the core team of Linux went to Red Hat. So that's where we are today. And in Nova Labs, we have two efforts. One effort is IoT, and we branded that as a division of 1663. And think of it as an IoT solutions provider. We go in to Fortune 500 companies, and we talk to them about how to leverage the Helium network, provide them on-ramps, development, tooling, whatever they need, and essentially act as that solutions provider to bring them along. So that's 1663, and we'll have more news around that in the next couple of months. So stay tuned for that. The Helium Mobile side is really the result of us acquiring a company called FreedomFi. And FreedomFi is one of the companies that came into the Helium ecosystem where their background is in cellular. They're a group of guys that just have this incredible understanding of the entire cellular and telco stack, from the back end infrastructure to the last mile to what they call the UE, the user experience and the user device. So Helium Mobile was really born from the fact that we wanted to get the Helium incentive model, in this case, the Helium L2, I guess, on top of Solana, to really work for cellular traffic and creation of essentially people-powered cell towers. And so it's, again, a two-sided market. One where people, individuals, in this case, we like small businesses with lots of foot traffic to stand up a cell tower. And that, there's a number of ways to do that. And there's a whole portfolio of tools that will have portfolio products that they can go after at different price points. But essentially, any small business can now install a quote-unquote Helium mobile hotspot and put them indoors in their store, outdoors at their patio seating area, and they can start to provide cellular coverage for Helium mobile subscribers. And Helium mobile subscribers for us are people that would subscribe to our service. It's like any other cell service, it just works. We partner with T-Mobile to ensure that where we don't have coverage, there's coverage. So if you're traveling, you're driving to soccer practice, picking up your kids from school, taking your parents to the hospital, you've got coverage. You can use Waze, you can use Google Maps on the phone, it just works. In that case, you're riding on top of our partner, T-Mobile. When you are in a restaurant, you are at work or at home, you're either on your home Wi-Fi or hopefully you're on the Helium mobile hotspot. And that's what differentiates us from a traditional, you know, telco provider, cell provider. And the way it works from a crypto perspective is that folks, small businesses, whoever, putting up these cell towers, they're mining a cryptocurrency called mobile tokens for the creation of that network and providing that sharing of their internet for cell users. If you are a subscriber to Helium Mobile, the first thing you'll notice that is different is that your data is all private. We're not going to resell your data. We're not going to resell your preferences. We're not going to monetize that. You can choose and opt in to provide location sharing for us, where you tell us where you are, where you're using a network, so that we can actually go and populate more and more Helium hotspots where the majority of Helium Mobile subscribers tend to be. Now, for doing that, you will be able to earn rewards. In this case, you'll earn mobile tokens for sharing that data. But you can, that's opt-in. You have to opt-in for that. You're naturally opt-out so that you don't share anything private about your account. If you opt-in, then you're rewarded with Helium Mobile tokens for doing work, for helping us like figure out where to put up more Helium hotspots. We're not us, but people, individuals should do that. So that's like, in short order, the system that we're building. And right now, we've launched the Helium Mobile service in Miami. And so we had a big sort of press launch around that. More, I would say, direct-to-consumer advertising is coming. We're doing a lot of tests right now. And once we get through that, you'll start to see a lot more Helium Mobile on the ground in Miami, in different parts of Miami, Miami-Dade County. And we will have more Helium Mobile hotspot products that we're launching to that market so that we can essentially match where our subscribers tend to be with Helium Mobile hotspots. The matching of the two is crucial. Kind of like how Lyft and Uber launched. They launched in the city. They need riders to choose Uber or Lyft instead of a yellow cab. And they need drivers to go drive those Uber cars and Lyft cars. And so we're doing something similar in that vein.
Yeah, but I mean, the big difference here, though, is that Uber and Lyft own that whole company and like all the revenue it generates and everything like that. I mean, they pay out the drivers and stuff, but the people own the towers, literally, on top of the businesses. And this is something that people who have never thought about, like, how does my cell phone actually like work and connect to the, get data and stuff? There are very few people who own those towers, like, and who have the licensing for the spectrum, for, you know, for the cellular data and stuff. And so this is a huge shift. I mean, if you're out here listening, you're like, man, maybe I should own one of these towers. Like, my, not financial advice, but my thinking is get one and start running it, because the long tail, I'm talking like 10, this is going to take like 10, 12, 15, 20 years to do. But the long tail, I think about it like real estate, right? Like you have a tower and you own a piece of real estate and it's passive income and people are just using it. That's like the goal, the end state, you know, it's all over the country, all over the world, and everyone has access and it is completely democratized. I don't think lots of people care about privacy, but I care about it. See, for me as a consumer, it's a huge value prop is to not give up my personal data. It's really important. We're running out of time here. So the last question I always ask is, what have I not asked you that I should have asked?
I think you've asked everything, but I would just reiterate the power of our community. The Helium community, now joined with Solana, really has, I think, given us exponential effect on both the IoT network as well as this new mobile movement around cell towers. And so I think for the audience listening, if you're curious, I highly encourage you to do research, do your own research, check out our Discord, which is discord.gg/helium. And the community is all in there. It's like 200,000 people in there. But read up from our website, Nova Labs or hellohelium.com. And really learn about what we're trying to do here. I would say really educate yourself and really think about doing this for the right reasons. This is, I think, most importantly about ownership. It's about decentralization and your ability to make an impact in a telco industry that hasn't changed really for a couple hundred years. And so when you think about impactful technology that's useful for a broad audience, hopefully a global audience, that's where I think Nova Labs is taking this. And we're just fortunate to have a Helium community. And now with Solana as well, the Solana community together doing this with us. Because again, Nova Labs is no way can we do this alone. This has to be an effort of a massive community. So we're very fortunate to have Solana and Helium.
Join the movement. Couldn't have picked a better note to end on. And it's still early days. So get involved. There's a lot of opportunity. Definitely. Thanks for coming on the show, Frank.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
You just heard the Index Podcast with your host, Alex Kahaya. If you enjoyed this episode, please give the show a 5-star rating and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your favorite streaming platform. New episodes available every other Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in.